T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome on in. It's Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. Thanks for tuning in. We got a lot to get to. We'll dive all over the world of mixed martial arts and boxing. We'll start off last night with both main events. First in the UFC, you had Rob Font. He won by decision over Cody Garbrandt, which was a big matchup. 3-4 in the bantamweight division. Hot division right now. Obviously, that has a lot of controversy holding over it with Aljamain Sterling and Petr Yan and Aljo's injury, the controversy of him having the belt, even though everybody looks at Petr Yan as the champion because of the way that fight ended. Even though Petr Yan is the one who cheated. Obviously, people haven't loved how Aljo's handled all that. So there's a lot of opportunity in this division right now for people to make a stand, make a statement. And Rob Font did that. Rob Font went out there today and really pieced up Cody. Cody had some success early on with some takedowns. But in the as the fight was going on, first of all, that reach advantage seemed like it was a big deal. Cody had to risk a lot to really put forth some power on him and wasn't really willing to make that commitment. And Rob Font was just hitting him with a lot of straight stuff, 1-2 down the pipe. And it was hurting Cody. Cody was pretty busted up about it. So, the former bantamweight champ, hey, he takes a back seat right now. Look, he's still super young in hindsight. He's only 29 years old, but he's obviously a guy who's also had a lot of vicious knockouts. He's a guy who's taking time off with concussions as well. So we'll see what this means for Cody No Love and his career as things continue. But for Rob Font, definitely puts him in the mix there at 135 pounds. I would still say that the favorite to go and get the initial title shot would probably go to the winner of Corey Sandhagen and TJ Dillashaw, which is, got punted a little bit because of injuries, but he's right there. I mean, look, if something goes wrong with the negotiation, somebody gets hurt, if it's a brutal fight, if Aljo can't go and they end up having to fight for an interim title, he's right there, especially with a win over the former champion. So a really impressive performance from Rob Font today to get himself the win and a long time coming. Cody was kind of the guy who burst onto the scene and took glory at that bantamweight and had that masterful performance against Dominic Cruz when Dominic Cruz is really at the peak of his powers. But now he's at a spot where he's still got some searching to do, and Rob Font, he's kind of taking the slow roll, but he's up here now. And in boxing last night, you had Josh Taylor. He became the undisputed junior welterweight champion of the world with his win over Jose Ramirez. Really, really fun fight between these two guys, especially with Josh Taylor really finding his way in the middle of this fight. It just really swung. It felt like Jose Ramirez was controlling it for the most part, was getting the better of it after a start quick in the first round by Josh Taylor. But then you got those rounds 2, 3, and 4. It felt like Jose was really starting to get in control. And then all of a sudden in round 6, you had the first knockdown of the match, which really, it just swung the entire fight. It really did. And Josh Taylor was great from then on out, especially getting a knockout the 7th round. Some controversy, some people wondering if it was dirty, if it was on the break. I thought that, Tim Bradley and Andre Ward explained it well. Like, it's protect yourself at all times. So no issue there from my standpoint. I thought the scorecards were a little too close because they essentially have this they have this a 6-6 on the roundage, and that the knockdowns were the difference. Now, look, they're huge differences, so ultimately the right guy won. I don't think this is one of those ones where we have to be harping on how terrible judging is. I do think, though, that they went a little bit too hard in the, hey, we're swinging this all the way to Jose Ramirez, because it didn't look as, you know, Josh Taylor didn't look as good as he did in the middle of this fight, where he really took the fight. I mean, it felt like he completely swung at his momentum. But, you know, if you look at the scorecards, like the last four rounds on Tim Cheatham's card went to Jose Ramirez, I got a hard time, you know, giving him every single one of those. Even if, you know, he showed guts, he did rally, but it was too little too late in my mind. And so Jose Ramirez gets this tough loss his way. You know, scorecards like that, super close. He's going to be back. Josh Taylor just had the better shots, ended up being the better man. And we'll see what happens with him. You know, some people call him for a fight with Terrence Crawford. Crawford's certainly got to be searching for a big fight, especially after the news this week. If you guys didn't hear, Manny Pacquiao is going to be fighting Errol Spence in the welterweight division. So could we see Josh Taylor move up? And that could kind of be a super fight of some sorts for Terrence Crawford. Perhaps. I don't know what Terrence is looking for at this point. You know, everybody was kind of looking at this this Pacquiao golden ticket like he was Willy Wonka, and Errol Spence ends up getting the chocolate factory to get this big time fight. And so Terrence certainly should probably going to be looking for a big fight. I don't know where that ends up. You know, maybe, you know, Teofimo ends up doing work in a couple of weeks, and, you know, maybe he's feeling super froggy and he wants to move up. I don't know. I mean, the one thing is that Terrence is at this point where he's super dangerous. It's a huge, huge risk for somebody. So you're going to need somebody a little bit crazy who wants to take him on, you know, but also it's this arms race of who is, you know, the true guy at welterweight. In my opinion, I think the better fighter is Terrence Crawford over Errol Spence. Errol Spence has certainly leaped up leaps and bounds in my eyes. I remember I was there live for his fight against Mikey Garcia. I just thought he showed a whole nother level to who he is, you know, but he also can, as we know, has a bit of a reckless side to him outside the ring. So could that catch up to him a little bit faster than, you know, certain things? And Terrence Crawford isn't young. So this is an interesting one from the standpoint of Errol's got a lot of pressure on this in this fight coming up with Manny. I don't think a lot of people think Manny, you know, has a shot. I think that people probably look at this and just say, well, this is too crazy to take on Errol Spence. I didn't think this fight was going to happen. You know, I didn't think that Manny had to take this fight. I didn't think that Manny had to, you know, prove himself against the Terrence Crawfords or the Errol Spences of the world. I thought that, you know, it was probably likely he was going to end up fighting somebody like Conor McGregor. Somebody like that, like do a gimmick fight for a ton of money. Now, obviously, Conor lost to Dustin, so probably messed up some plans. This gives him something else to do in the summer. I think that it will end up doing really good business because it's the best opponent Manny's taken on in a long time. Errol's had some pay-per-view success relatively for him kind of just bursting out of the scene. But I think that this fight could be really, really commercially successful, especially just that Manny's just such a rock star, man. Like, I don't know how to really explain what that guy means, but I was in the building for him versus Keith Thurman, and just the electricity that place had when he put Thurman on the canvas early in that fight, he just still has that ability, man. He just still has that ability to be a rock star and to sell things and to sell out. And the fact that at his age, you know, that Manny Pacquiao in his 40s, is out here trying to fight arguably the best welterweight on the planet, arguably one of the best fighters on the planet, and he's doing it months before he turns 43 years old. I just, you know, how do you not just respect the complete balls on this guy, that he has the guts to go in there against somebody like Errol Spence, who people regard as a dangerous puncher, a guy who puts people away. Now, look, Manny has made a living out of beating bigger men. That's kind of his MO, is going in there and brutalizing bigger fighters. You know, it's what he does. It's kind of his calling card. So I don't think he takes the fight if he doesn't think there is a path there to victory. I don't think this is just like, hey, I'm doing Al Haymon a solid here. I think that he had options and that he's had a lot of talk in the past of what he thinks about Errol Spence, and that he sees a guy who's a little bit vulnerable. You know, it's not like Errol Spence in his last fight against Danny Garcia blew the doors off of Danny Garcia. He took a relatively safe opponent, a guy that he was much bigger than, but it wasn't like the most pleasing performance. Now, you give him some of a break because, hell, he did it off of a car accident, so I don't want to nitpick too much on Errol Spence. But even the Sean Porter fight, the Sean Porter fight was super close. So we haven't seen a guy in his last couple fights look like the dominant guy that he did, where I think everybody looked at him against Mikey Garcia and was like, whoa. But look, he's still a dangerous guy. He can go in there. He can break orbital bones like he did against Kell Brook. This guy is a super, super dangerous fighter. And, you know, has talked about the willingness to go up and fight Canelo Alvarez. He's got the skills. I would say out of, like, you think about the big guys that Manny has fought, and you think about somebody maybe like Antonio Margarito, you know, maybe at his time where he's still off of the whole cinder block glove controversy, was still a little bit at the top of the peak of his powers before Manny went and broke his orbital bone. Obviously the Oscar De La Hoya fight, where he beat down a weathered Manny, Oscar De La Hoya, Miguel Cotto naturally bigger than him. You know, this is just a thing that he's gone on about and done his entire career, and has had just a ton of success for it. I just think that it's interesting that a lot of people are clamoring for, like, we're clamoring and are mad, I think, at Floyd Mayweather. It's I'm sorry that I got to tie the two together, but I don't have any problem with Floyd going and fighting Logan Paul. But imagine, like, how crazy it is that Floyd would be going in there and fighting a Terrence Crawford or somebody like that. I just think he would do it. Now, there's a little bit of a difference. I think that Floyd has a pristine resume in boxing that he has to uphold or wants to uphold and wants to be part of his legacy. I don't think Manny really does have a ton to lose here. If he goes and loses to Errol Spence, he probably was supposed to. He's almost 43 years old. But if he wins and he gets that IBF welterweight championship, if he is the guy who becomes the unified welterweight champion of the world at 42 years old, I mean, what else could you say about the guy? Like, you know, the guy's already an 8-division champion. He's already a bona fide Hall of Famer, one of the most popular fighters on the planet, one of the most entertaining fighters on the planet. Just watching his pleasing offensive style, the in and outs, his propensity to put people on the canvas. You know, there was a lot of this talk over the years that Manny had lost his power. You know, that Manny had been a guy who couldn't knock guys out. And I've always said, I'm like, yeah, but go back and look how many in those fights he's knocked somebody down. You know, so, like, you could go and you could say, oh, well, Manny, he doesn't have that knock-dead power. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess once you get to a certain point and you're not taking on junior welterweights anymore, it's going to be hard to knock guys out cold. You're not going to Ricky Hatton everybody. But go and look about how many guys he's just put on their ass. And that number goes sky high. Like, he has an ability to get 10-8 rounds, to have a crowd behind him. It's a dangerous fight for Errol Spence. I get why he should be the heavy favorite and why I don't even actually know if he is the heavy favorite, to be honest with you. I should check the odds on that. Let's see. Spence, Pacquiao, odds. Let's see. Opening odds. Manny Pacquiao is a +350 underdog to Errol Spence, who's -450. Not surprising. You know, not surprising for, you're talking about a guy and the talents and the lineage that Errol Spence brings to the table. But man, it's kind of what Manny's been hearing his whole career. It really has been. And the way that he looked against Keith Thurman, you know, if that guy could show up, Now, look, he's taking on a much better guy because Keith is on the other side of it. Keith is certainly not as dangerous as I think Errol is right now. Not as good as Errol is right now. And Keith talked about this in the lead up. Like, man, he probably wouldn't have fought a 100% Keith Thurman. I don't think we've seen 100% Keith Thurman in a long time. But either way, you know, he's still one of the best to ever do it. He doesn't look like he's quite lost his fastball. People are always going to be suspect of the chin just because of the Juan Manuel Marquez knockdown. That was 10 years ago. I mean, you know, we're still going to sit here and worry about what Manny has as far as a chin is concerned. It's a crazy once-in-a-lifetime punch from a rival who is juiced to the gills. So I'm excited about this. You know, I there probably should be part of me that's worried for Manny and thinks that this is maybe a little bananas. I think it is a little bananas, but I just have such respect for what this guy brings from a courage standpoint to the ring. And it's awesome. We'll continue on. We come back. We will get into the heavyweight title picture. Obviously, that was thrown a big, big, big curveball this week. We'll get into that coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. It's Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Let's get to this heavyweight division in boxing. That was the big, big story this week as far as Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua is concerned. Just to recap what went down this week. So, honestly, about a week from today, it was Tyson Fury who came out and said that the fight's official. We're on August 14th in Saudi Arabia. Me versus AJ, undisputed heavyweight championship of the world. We've all been waiting for it. Can't wait. Let's get to it. Finally. You know, what do we have? We had Eddie Hearn on 3 months ago when we were talking about, oh, it's going to be 2 weeks where we're going to announce this. Been spinning our wheels on this decision for a long, long time. And, I mean, not 24 hours later does a story come out and it says Deontay Wilder has been ruled in favor for by an arbiter and Tyson Fury has to fight Deontay Wilder. I think it was by September 15th. So, and has to fight before Anthony Joshua and him fight, which is pretty crazy because first of all, there's a couple of things that are nuts about this. One, the fact that I guess the general public didn't know about it. Like I've heard a lot of boxing pundits discuss this. Now in the aftermath, I mean, listen, I'm a guy, I got my nose, my big nose and my beak in the business of boxing pretty well. I mean, obviously I'm covering a lot. I'm not like, you know, covering it die hard, like every day because I'm, you know, covering Heat and Dolphins and all this stuff. Panthers playoffs are going on right now. So listen, understandably, some stuff slips past the cracks to me. I haven't heard jack squat about a Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury arbitration case. What I basically, the last legal matter that I had heard was that there was a date that was set that they had to negotiate a fight for. They basically didn't. And that Tyson Fury was moving on and they were in the clear, just moving on, that they had the legal proceedings to do so. And that's what you would just assume. Like if you are going through all of this stuff, right? If you're negotiating site fees and dates and where it's going to be and all this type of stuff, one would just assume that, okay, the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed. Why would they be moving on if there was a chance that something legally could be blown up? So the fact that we didn't know about this and this wasn't covered very much or didn't know that this was a possibility is pretty wild because I'm telling you, nowhere in the lead up to any of this stuff did anybody say, hey, by the way, there's still this pending Wilder decision. Everybody's telling you now all of a sudden they knew. They didn't tell you about it. So I just want that to be pointed out as we're going down this rabbit hole. Second of all, It is. It's not. You know, the decision for the arbiter to rule in favor of it is also interesting. I'm not a. I'm definitely represent the Boxton law firm, but I do understand the idea that, hey, this kind of has been a while since these guys have fought. It seems silly that now we're at the point where a ruling is coming down. That's the other thing I find odd about it. So let me get this straight. The arbiter just happened to come down with the ruling right when it was decided that Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua were going to fight officially in August. The arbiter just happened to make the decision that week. That's pretty wild. I mean, like, I know Deontay Wilder is like throwing out conspiracy theories lately, but that's a pretty crazy one. And I guess that the idea was that they could have paid some step aside money for Deontay Wilder. There was numbers. The only number I really saw thrown around was like $20 million, which seems like a preposterous amount of money not to work. I got to be honest with you. I guess in hindsight, it could make you happy and not doing legal fees and all that type of stuff, but seems perpetually wild. And so basically what's funny about it is, so we took, I don't know, months upon months for the AJ and Tyson Fury thing to become official. And the Deontay Wilder Tyson Fury one got agreed to like that. Now, I guess because they already have a previous standing contract, that's probably why it didn't take as long. But they had like broadcasters, venue, all the stuff just set, ready to go. I just found it all very odd. So Tyson Fury ends up getting called out by AJ. AJ calls him a fraud. Tyson Fury challenges him to a $20 million winner-take-all bare-knuckle match. I mean, you know, nobody's going to say yes to that. This is dumb. But it's a bummer. Look, man, the idea that we're not getting Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury right now sucks. I mean, it sucks. We were so close to getting the undisputed championship of the world. And I just think part of the reason I'm so disappointed in it is because, look, I am a big Deontay Wilder fan. I picked him to win both fights. I picked him to win the original. I certainly picked him to win the rematch. And the original, I thought, went kind of how most people thought it would go. It was like, yeah, Tyson Fury was going to outbox him, and Deontay Wilder would find his nuclear missile and find Tyson Fury's chin. Tyson Fury just happened to be touched by, you know, the 8-count ghost, and boom, he was up. So you just got to give him credit for that. But that fight kind of went how I thought the fight would go. The second fight, I mean, it wasn't even close. I mean, he beat the holy hell out of Deontay Wilder. And Deontay Wilder did not look like he had any plan B, C, D, or E. Like, it was a complete mauling from Tyson Fury. And all that we've gotten in the aftermath is from Deontay Wilder is, you know, the costume was heavy. Tyson Fury's gloves were played with. There was something in the glove that cracked my skull. There was something, the glove was open. It, you know, cut my ear. Something was in my water. Mark Breland, my trainer, was on the take. Deontay Wilder just had every excuse under the sun for losing this fight. And that has really, I think, lost him a lot of fans. I think it's really bummed him out. Now, I can give him somewhat of a pass for not taking a loss. Well, it's the first time he's lost in his 34 years on this life at boxing, since the amateurs, I guess. But first time he's lost professionally. And having a hard time in handling that is understandable. It's just the wildness of being able to just, I don't know, ever accept the fact that maybe Tyson Fury was just better on that night. That's what's tough about it. And it leads you to believe, like, how do you think this guy is going to be able to beat a guy who he doesn't have respect for? You know, how is he supposed to fix a problem against Tyson Fury and find a way to beat him if he doesn't really feel like he was beat, if he feels like he was cheated. And I think that's a dangerous thing for Deontay. You know, if you were to tell me that Deontay Wilder, and I know that he's got a new trainer now and stuff like that, but if you were to tell me Deontay Wilder was working on something different or was working on his speed to, you know, deal with the pressure of Tyson Fury, something, maybe that would give me a little bit more hope that he would have a better chance in this rematch. I just don't know how we've seen him now be beat basically twice, because he didn't win the majority of the rounds. I mean, I've been over this plenty of times in the first fight. Like, I think generously you could get to a draw, but you'd have to be really generous. And with the second fight, it wasn't even close. So just what are we to believe that he's going to do the next time around? Now, look, he certainly has the great equalizer in that right hand of his. He hits with more ferocity, with more power than anybody in the heavyweight division. You know, some think since Mike Tyson. Cool. But is he going to be able to do that against a guy who's bigger than him, who is a better boxer than him, who's lighter on his feet than him, who has better angles than him? And now appears like he's able to, you know, out strongman him. It's tough. So I think that's the big problem with this, is that, okay, we have Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder. I think that they'll have a great lead up. And if Deontay Wilder is able to sell all this conspiracy stuff, I think some people will still buy it. It'll still have a nice audience. It's still the heavyweight championship of the world, and it has a lot on the line. But it's not the fight we want to see. And that's disappointing. You know, we've been here now twice with Deontay fighting Tyson Fury instead of Anthony Joshua. And now we're here with Tyson Fury fighting Deontay Wilder instead of Anthony Joshua. It's disappointing. And now simultaneously, AJ now has to go fight and defend his WBO title against Alexander Usyk, which I imagine is going to happen because Usyk is repped by Eddie Hearn. Eddie Hearn, I imagine, wants to get a fight in for AJ. The WBO is calling for this fight to happen. We want this to be an undisputed title. The problem for him is, look, Alexander Usyk's no punk. You know, like, Alexander Usyk is the lineal, the undisputed cruiserweight champion of the world. He hasn't looked fantastic at heavyweight. You know, he definitely hasn't looked like the world beater that he was when he was in the lighter divisions, but he's really good. He is really talented. He does have a lot of skill. I still think AJ will win, but you know, guys who are skilled boxers, guys who can move a little bit, who can be elusive. We saw that with Andy Ruiz. That gave him a little bit of trouble. We've seen it with other guys that they can get that chin and they can put him in a little bit of vulnerable places. Like AJ, to me, he's a supremely entertaining fighter. And, you know, is a great finisher and, you know, really is really has some great stuff about him. But this is heavyweight boxing, and I do think that, you know, his propensity to get hit, we've seen his chin be tested and failed that test against multiple guys, and we've seen him in some cases get outboxed against certain opponents. So I just think that Alexander Usyk is not a walk in the park. Even if he hasn't looked fantastic at heavyweight, one, I think that I would like to see him in the ring there. Like, will he rise to the occasion? Like, we've seen that with Tyson. Like, Tyson Fury took on a couple of guys where, you know, it's kind of lackluster and his performances weren't that impressive, but sometimes the best opponents can bring the best out of you. And I think that with Alexander Usyk, I think that's the case, that maybe a test like Anthony Joshua can bring the best out of him. I gotta be honest with you, man. I really feel like we've been dealt a hand here that's gonna end up with one of these guys, either Tyson Fury running into a Deontay Wilder bomb or Alexander Usyk boxing AJ's socks off. And these plans that we had of AJ versus Tyson Fury, and I know they're now punting it to December or November, I wouldn't count on it, man. I wouldn't count on it. Yeah, they probably will both be favored in both fights, and people will probably think, oh, they'll definitely win both fights. Well, we didn't think he was going to lose to Andy Ruiz, did we? You know? We didn't think Deontay Wilder was ever going to get knocked out by Tyson Fury. You know, maybe we thought that he was going to lose, but we didn't think that he was going to lose like that. And heavyweight boxing, it doesn't ever seem to do what you think it's going to do. And so I think that this is a huge deal what happened this week. I don't know how the hell Top Rank and Tyson Fury's side let this happen. It's a disaster as far as I'm concerned. Still fights. I guess we end up with fights that I will watch, but as a fan, I can't help but feel a little bit cheated because, you know, I thought by the end of the summer we were going to have an undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, and instead, you know, we don't. We ended up with two fights that we end up with a fight that we really had no interest in seeing in Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder, and then you have a fight with Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk, which I think is a little bit lackluster too. You went from, I'm sure, for the British fan standpoint of, you know, you have these two guys from the UK fighting for the undisputed championship of the world, and now it's put on hold. We'll take a quick break. We're back after this. Welcome back, everybody. Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. You guys can download the podcast on the Audacy app, AUDACY. Go check it out there. You guys can also go to Tobin Show on YouTube to watch some show clips as well. Did an interview this week with Valerie Lareda. She ended up losing for the first time in her career this week. She dropped to 3-1. 22 years old, though. Bellator. That's the risk, man. Like with Bellator, it's really cool that they have this opportunity for people to be able to watch their young prospects and how they develop. But, you know, develop is the key word there. And so you will see some young fighters of theirs falter, you know, like Aaron Pico did. I mean, Aaron Pico, we saw his debut at Madison Square Garden and he ended up losing. So I think she'll be able to bounce back. Cyborg ended up getting the win over Leslie Smith in the main event there. As Bellator has been rolling there on Showtime, and good for Cyborg. Danny Sabatella, by the way, another local product. He won on 6 days' notice, so out of American Top Scenes, who good from that front locally. But Laredo will look to, I'm sure, bounce back again. Only 22 years old, so no worries there. I want to get to a part of the program now. It's called Wacky Fights, which is like, it's kind of like we do boxing, we do mixed martial arts, and then we got to get to the wacky stuff that's going on. So here's what we got. So Jake Paul, he is now unbanned from from the Mayweather-Logan Paul card. And one of the reasons is he just signed with Showtime. So I imagine that they want to promote whatever his next opportunity ends up being. There was some talk that it was going to be a boxing match between him and Kamaru Usman. Obviously, that would have had to have been through the UFC with Kamaru. And they've got their own little thing going on right now as far as letting guys go box, because this was an interesting thing this week as Oscar De La Hoya. I don't remember if we talked about this last week. I can't remember if we mentioned it or not. But Oscar De La Hoya called out Dana White. He wants to fight Dana White now for blocking GSP from boxing him. And this is interesting because for a couple of reasons. One, you know, Dana White has let Anderson Silva out of his contract pretty recently. Anderson Silva has been hard times, losing a bunch of fights in a row. But he's going to end up going to box. He's going to fight, I think, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., I think that fight is coming up pretty soon. And, you know, so why not? Why not let Dana White? Why wouldn't he let GSP go box, you know, somebody? But the problem is, from this standpoint, is Dana White hates Oscar De La Hoya like poison. Like, you want to talk about the two people in combat sports Dana White hates the most, I would say the list is Bob Arum and then Oscar De La Hoya. Like, he hates their guts. And so, I, you know, Dana has, you know, been fairly complimentary of some stuff on Triller in the past, but Oscar De La Hoya, he's never been complimentary of, and has taken every shot. So there's no way he's going to let GSP go and fight Oscar De La Hoya. I truly believe if GSP wanted to go box anybody else, he would allow him to do it. I really believe that. And, you know, they're making this whole thing about, you know, oh, well, Oscar and GSP is Oscar is GSP's hero, all that type of stuff. It's like, yeah, it's cool. But if I have an opportunity to make Oscar De La Hoya's life miserable, I'm going to do it. Now, you know, should Dana White do GSP a solid here and be like, hey, man, I'm not coming back to the UFC. So can you just let me go do what I want to do? I think that would be fairly cool. I mean, like, what's the point? I mean, we know that the UFC is doing this now with a lot of their veterans, is that they're cutting guys left and right. They're letting them go do whatever. They're going, some are going to Bellator, some are going to PFL. If GSP's not coming back, what's the harm in letting him go box? But there's obviously a personal vendetta there, which really sucks for GSP. That he wants to fight Oscar, because I kind of think that if it was against anybody else, Dana would give the okay. But because it's against him, not so much. Michael Chandler said this week that he believes there is a case to be made for him to get an immediate rematch with Charles Oliveira. I'm here to say for Michael Chandler that case has been thrown out, and that the next person who should be fighting Charles Oliveira for the title should either be Conor McGregor or Dustin Poirier. Look, when Chandler lost last week, first of all, Chandler was already fast track a title shot. Let's be honest. And I say this as somebody who really, really likes Michael Chandler. Really, really likes Michael Chandler. But he was fast tracked a title shot anyway. The idea that he thinks he should be given a rematch, like, he got knocked out in the second round. Like, he obviously has to go find himself a fight and go win it. I don't know if that's against Justin Gaethje. I don't know if that's if that's taking on the loser of Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor. I don't know what that entails. But all I know is that if the person who wins July's fight doesn't fight for the belt, what are we doing? Like, Dustin Poirier is the number one guy on the planet. Conor McGregor is fighting the number one guy on the planet. Whoever wins that fight is the number one contender, and they should be fighting Charles Oliveira. This shouldn't be that hard. So I know Michael Chandler says that he wants to fight, you know, I think it's either, I think he said within 12 months, because within the year seems a little ridiculous, unless you were to fight on July's card and were to fight Justin Gaethje. And he just had, you know, a monumental knockout, and Conor versus Dustin sucked. It's like, that's the only way I could see it happening. The only way, outside of obviously injury or somebody having a dirty drug test or something like that. But yeah, I don't know, man. That one didn't sit well with me this week. Big title fight coming up next week, as Devin Haney is going to be fighting Jorge Linares for Devin Haney's WBC title. I mean, his piece is the interim lightweight title. And I thought this would be an interesting place to kind of take stock of this lightweight division that we were all, as the kids say these days, we're given their flowers. That's what the hip kids are saying these days. We were all given the lightweight division its flowers last year, and saying that this was the hot division, this was the division that was going to save boxing. All of these guys are undefeated, all of these guys are in their 20s, they're all up and coming, they all talk great trash, they're all great on social media. So we were excited about Teofimo Lopez and Devin Haney and Ryan Garcia and Gervonta Davis. And I just thought it'd be an interesting time right now to kind of take stock of things, because, you know, Devin Haney's going to have this fight against Jorge Linares. Certainly a step up. Linares is always is game, and he's dangerous. But it's still of the ilk of his last fight, which was against Yuriyokis Gamboa, which was a shutout, but it wasn't entertaining. And I do think that in this arms race of who is the man at 135, who is the man at lightweight, I do think that there is a level of entertainment to Devin's fighting, which is pristine and great boxing, but his ability to get the highlight reel knockout hasn't been recent. It hasn't been recent. Not like, you know, not like Ryan Garcia did, and certainly not like Gervonta Davis's knockout for hell. And I put Gervonta Davis in this category. I know right now he's kind of floating. He's not really even in this division. You know, he was at 130. He's fought at 135. Now he's going to junior welterweight. So he's really fluctuating all over the place. But I put him in there just because he's kind of still in that category. Ryan is not fighting right now for personal stuff he's been going through. And you wish him the best and hope that you know, he gets all better. And he's still just a baby. I mean, he's still early in 20s. Devin's still early in his 20s. Teofimo's still early in his 20s, and Gervonta's mid 20s. So those four guys right now, it hasn't, I think, gone as they have planned. Now, the one thing I will say is, out of all of them, Teofimo, I think, is putting himself head and shoulders, you know, and he made arguments about this, that he thought that we were giving the other guys too much credit too soon. Because he took the biggest risk. I mean, he took on Lomachenko, put a lot on the line, and became the man at this weight class. And I personally think that he's taking on the best guy coming up next. You know, he's taking on a young, in his prime, contender, undefeated in George Ferocious Kambosos. And so I just think that means more than what the other guys are doing. The other guys are kind of still, you know, really, and Devin is coming up next week, is kind of just poking around with guys who have been there, done that. And it's a step up in class. And if he gets the win over Jorge Linares, which he should, good. But what? I mean, Jorge Linares was fighting for this belt, you know, a couple of years ago against Lomachenko and showed some stuff, but like, what is this going to do for anybody? You beat Jorge Linares, you know, hopefully he does it in super impressive fashion and does this with the level of, does it with a level of flair that he really didn't have in the Uriokis Gamboa fight, because Devin Haney, I think, needs a little bit of that. You know, he does, I think, everything else so well. He goes and he is at every single fight, promotes himself well. He's great in interviews. But I do think that he needs, I think he needs something that really puts him on the map this week against Linares. I really, really do. To have himself be able to call anybody out that really, I think, will, you know, they all know what he brings to the table from a boxing skill standpoint. So why are they going to fight him if they don't think that he's as marketable as the other guys? But I certainly don't think right now, even with that, him fighting Jorge Linares is not the fight of Teofimo taking on George Kambosos. I don't care what Linares has done. I'm talking about Linares now. And so for me, yeah, he's just not at that point. He's just, it's just not as impressive of a fight to me. You know, and then for Gervonta, you know, going up to fight Mario Barrios, he, you know, going up a couple of weight classes, that's cool. That's also really cool. But you also wonder, like, all right, is this a case of he wants to, you know, as they're saying, you know, dare to be great? Or is this a case of, I don't really want to make the weight anymore? You know, he's a tremendous puncher. He's super powerful. I still think he can get it done against these guys. It's a fun card coming up on June 26th. I'll definitely be tuned into it. But again, it just sucks that we were at this point, you know, a year ago, and we were saying, oh my God, 135, that is the division. And it kind of feels like that's fizzled out. It feels like that's fizzled out real, real soon. Now, look, coming up on June 19th at Lone Depot Park, with Kambosos versus Lopez, it could be a real, real barn burner. I mean, this could be a really, really fun fight. And, you know, maybe that feels like it lifens up the division again, like it re-sparks energy. Maybe Teofimo does something highlight reel worthy and, you know, calls out Gervonta, calls out a Terrence Crawford, does something crazy. But for all the credit that this division got early on, it needs to be jolted back into life, certainly. And I think that we'll start next week with Devin Haney against Jorge Linares, and then certainly with Teofimo taking on George Kambosos in a couple weeks, and then whatever the hell you want to call Gervonta Davis with him in a few weeks. So we'll, I think, have a lot more clarity on things by the end of this month. But for right now, the man is Lopez. That's the dude. Everybody else, I think they prematurely got their credit. I think it was premature. That's our show for this week, everybody. We will talk to you guys same time, same place next week. Thank you for tuning in, and everybody have a great rest of your week.